All right, video's rolling, Lord willing. Beautiful. So big idea from Numbers 13, and it's a lot, to walk by faith into God's promises, which is what the spies should have done, with shrewd strategy, that's what pessimists bring to the table, and neighbor-inspiring love, that's what optimists bring to the table, because of our fond fixation on Jesus. So, I know, it's quite a lot, right? But to walk into God's promises, but the way we have the confidence to walk into God's promises is because we are fixed on Jesus. But as we do so with shrewd strategy, excuse me, and with neighbor-inspiring love. At least that's the argument I'm going to make. So let's take a look at the text and see if it is actually there. So the first section is verses 1 through 16, but I'm going to hopefully be somewhat kind and ask somebody to read just verses 1 through 3, because verses 4 through 16 are the, well, I guess 4 through 15 are the names. And the I don't want you guys, okay, just go for it. I'm sorry, Miss Shaniqua.
The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan. I'm giving to the people of Israel. And when they spy out the land, they shall come to so Moses sent them from the wilderness to Aaron, according to the command of the Lord, all of the men who were heads of the people of Israel."
Beautiful. Background, not that you need much of it, but the Israelites have obviously left Sinai. They have wandered through the desert, and now they are at the edge of the Promised Land. They're at the southern edge, and they're ready to go in. And obviously this happens. Any just off-the-cuff reactions to this occurrence? Pretend you don't know the rest of the story. Just okay, I'm just curious. Mine is like, why? Like, why are we doing this? Like, if the Lord has said, this is the land promised to you guys, go get it. You know what I mean? Like, why are we stopped? I mean, obviously the Lord is telling us to, or he tells them, stop and send spies. So, okay, if God says do it, you better do it, whether you understand it or not. But still, like, just, it doesn't make sense to me as to why this is happening. I'll try to unpack more of that later, but I at least wanted to present that as something that I found confusing. If you stick around me long, you remember the whole PF caps thing I throw at you regularly: pattern, flow, context, absent surprise, excuse me, absent details, present details, and then surprises is the last one. And to me, this was a surprise. I was not expecting this, if you will, in the flow of the story. Like, we're here, let's go. Why do we need a recon team? But apparently God says it, so we do. So the only other thing that I at least want to remark on is, what was the, aside from the fact that God commanded us to do this, what was the, I guess, the prereq, if you will, for who went in and did the job? It's mentioned twice. Correct? A chief, a leader, which was interesting. You know, he doesn't, not that I know that, you know, I doubt that the Israelites had like professional ninjas among their, you know, group or anything like that, but it's the leaders, a leader from each tribe that gets sent in, which I think is interesting. And I want to get into that more in the second part, but here at least is what I want to toss at you, just as, you know, whatever, I don't know if you call it a principle or whatever, but the first section calls for us to have leaders who stay ready to step up. Like, these guys had to be ready to just step up and assume the authority and take the job and do what they were supposed to do. And I won't harp on it much, I hope, because one, my third point is really my biggest point, if I can get there. And two, Matt kind of already said this, if you were listening to the sermon this morning, with the whole Ananias and Sapphira thing and how Ananias really should have led better. And how, if he didn't, Sapphira should have stepped up and led her family as much as she could have, that kind of thing. But basically, it's just another call for us, particularly the men in the room, to be good leaders. And the way you be a good leader, more on that in a moment, is to stay ready to step up. Let's see. I will get to George VI in a moment. I'm just trying to see if there's anything. Yeah, this... to be ready, to stay ready, to step up. George VI is one of my heroes, so here's an illustration of it. George VI is the king who, well, backstory, if you've ever seen the King's Speech, that's George VI. So he was not supposed to be king. He was the second in line. He was the Harry, if you will, under his father, George V. Edward VIII was supposed to be the rightful king. And if you know this story, he ends up having a fling and then later marrying a twice divorced American woman, which at the time, at least, I mean, this is right before World War II, DQs you from being king. And everybody's like, you know, they told him, including his father, you need to step up and not get involved with this woman because you are a king and you can't do this. And he said, too bad. And so Bertie was his name was Albert. Everybody called him Bertie because he was a very effeminate king. Again, if you've seen the King's Speech, Colin Firth. Was that the name of the guy in King's Speech? Okay. He did a pretty good job of representing him. He was kind of this, he had two things he loved, collecting stamps and shooting skeet. So he was not the kind of guy that you would put forward to be a great king, right? But I tell you all that, sorry, I'm going off too long on my hero here. But he stepped up, because if you know the story, George VI becomes king. He learns to give his speech, if you've watched the King's Speech. And he is king when World War II hits Britain. And he works with Winston Churchill, and he ends up becoming one of the great kings when victory was finally achieved. I mean, he went through the Blitz in Buckingham Palace with, or maybe it was Windsor Palace. Now I can't remember which one he was in. I know, isn't that a terrible thing to say? But like the palace got blitzed and he was in it and the people praised him for it. So anyway, I'm just giving you an example of a guy who stepped up. And as leaders, we need to be ready to step up. I'll give you one more like really sad, really tragic example, and then a less tragic but still sad example. So with all the Charlie Kirk stuff and the Ukrainian gal getting stabbed on the Charlotte light rail, if you know that story, like the thing that's really been bothering me the past week is if I were on the light rail when that woman got stabbed, what would I have done? And like, I don't know. Because the part of that whole thing that's scariest to me is how nobody did anything like after she got stabbed. And like you see it on the video and stuff like that. And it makes me wonder, would I have stepped up the way that these leaders were called to step up? I sure hope, and I'm asking Jesus to give me the kind of courage to do so. And here's one of the reasons I don't think I would have, but I'm asking Jesus to change me to where I would. One of the things that haunts me, I'm glad the knuckles are here because we're going to work Dairy Queen into all these lessons. We'll get to Chick-fil-A eventually, I'm sorry. But one of the memories that haunts me, I remember, like I can see the pattern of tile on the floor where this little girl dropped her ice cream cone and it spilled out and her dad just lit into her like nobody's business. And I did nothing. And it bothers me to this day. Like, I'm not saying I needed to stand up and like confront the dad, but like I could have been like, it's okay, girl. I'm sorry. We'll go buy you another one. Accidents happen. Your dad's, he loves you. He's just, you know, whatever, upset. Cause that probably, he probably had to work really hard to pay for that. I don't know. But I didn't do a thing. And here we are, it was probably 7 years ago and it still bothers me. But the whole reason I'm telling you this, not just like therapy and trauma and stuff like that, is because like really, it's not about whether you're a good spy, it's about being ready to step up, especially if you are in a leadership position. So more on how you get ready to step up as we go, but like just the call to be ready to step up, to do what the Lord calls you to do, and to answer the need of the moment at any given time. Now watch some kind of like crisis pop up here and I'm going to feel terrible because I do remember for what it's worth. I remember because, you know, now we have to go through shooter training as teachers. You know, you used to have to go through whatever, nuclear bomb training and stuff like that. But I remember one of the things that they told us is when push comes to shove, it doesn't really matter what you do as long as you don't do nothing. It doesn't really matter what you do. And like he was talking defending in court. He's like, we're going to have to go to court when this is all over because you're going to get sued and this, that, and the other thing. And I will not be able to protect you if you did nothing. But if you did something, if you tried to get your kids out, if you fought the guy, if you whatever, as long as you did something, I can protect you. But if you do nothing, you're dead in the water. Now, of course, it's kind of bad because it's like there's a shooter. Do I really care if I'm going to get sued or not? But you get what I'm like. The point was, you got to do something, whatever that might be. All right, enough about that. Let's move on to hopefully happier climbs. So now we get to the second section. I'm going to call this Recon and Rally. And let me ask two people to read this one. If I can get one volunteer to read 17 through 20 takers. This is going to, is it Zach? I'm sorry. Okay, cool. So I would hope so. That's touche. Well, I forgot poor Matt's name, but again, am I going to step up and ask him, or am I going to just timidly stay there and do nothing and never learn the name? But anyway, okay, so in a moment, if Zach will read 16 through 20, which is where Moses basically gives him his marching orders, and then can I get a volunteer to read 21 through 24, where we see what happened? Thank you, Hallie. No offense, but I just like her better. All right, Zach, if you'll start us off, please.
So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob near Lebo Hamath. They went up into the Negev and came to Hebron. Timon, Jeshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. Hebron was built 7 years before it was found in Egypt. They came to the valley of Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between the two of them. They also brought some pomegranates. That place is called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of the people of Israel.
Thank you kindly. Good job. I didn't think about all the names when I gave that to you, but you stepped up and well done. Any thoughts or reactions to, let's focus on Moses' command first, like what he wanted them to do? Ben?
Context, I would say, to the first question, last part, which is like, okay, God is giving us this.
Okay.
So I guess it gives like some actually trying. And I don't know that this is biblical, but this is my thought. I'm like, okay, but still, like, why are they doing that? And it's like, they're gathering all this information. But on top of that, it says, My version says, do your best to bring back some of the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, but like, they're going to be bringing this L as well as back. And I think it's used for edifying the people that they're going to say, like, that's given a very bountiful blessing.
Well said. And I think that's pretty much exactly what is supposed to happen. Again, for me, it's like, why are we doing this? Like, if God's already said, you know, we've got this land, like, who cares? Let's just go do it. But I came up with kind of two purposes, which I think is what Ryan said, and it's this recon and rally thing. On the one hand, let's recon the place. There is a place for strategy in the Christian life. There is a place for shrewdness and for thinking. Think of Pastor Matt's thing about deal making and businesses and scaling and stuff like that. You know, Joshua had strategy when he led the people into the land. Jesus calls for us in Matthew 10:16 to be shrewd as serpents and as innocent as doves. In Luke 16, verse 8, if you remember the parable of the unrighteous steward, Jesus says, or he laments, he says, the sons of this age are more shrewd in their use of mammon, money, than the sons of the kingdom. So there is a place for recon, for thinking, for pessimists. By the way, I'm not saying we should be pessimists, but pessimists do tend to be better at strategy and thinking things out and coming up with plans and stuff like that. Now, they need optimists to get them there, because once the pessimist makes the plan and realizes it's all not worth it, we'll just stay here and be fine and safe and that kind of thing. But the optimist convinces them, has them look at the fruit and see, look at what God is giving to us. And so I think what's supposed to happen, you know, supposed to happen is, yes, they are supposed to recon, but they're supposed to come back and rally the people. look at what God has given to us to be the leaders they're supposed to be. We've got this. Like, this is fantastic. Look at what we are about to inherit, and let's move forward. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what's supposed to happen. A quick illustration, just because, you know, I should honor my great hero or whatever. This week was Constitution Week. The Constitution of the United States was finished on the 17th of September, 1787. And I'm telling you this, one, because I like it, but two, like, seriously, I think we're blessed to live in America, and we should know what made America, and we should rejoice at America. But anyway, if you know anything about the Constitutional Convention, it actually wasn't called to make a constitution. It was called to try to amend the Articles of Confederation, because everybody was so terrified of having a single monarch. They made the Articles of Confederation, but it was so weak it couldn't do anything. It's all good, baby. But couldn't. No, I'm not. I love it. Joe would love it more if he were here, but he's more the optimist. I'm more the pessimist. How's that? Anyway, I'm not sure where Michael fits in the whole thing. I think he's just a balancing keel to our whole ship. Anyway, so the Articles of Confederation weren't doing the job. They were just too loose. And if you study how the Constitution ended up getting written, it really is an amazing story. And I know I sound like a total history nerd saying that, but like, it really is cool. I actually had my kids study it because the school said I had to, but, you know, I did a good job with it. But I had a kid tell me, they had to write a reflection of it afterward, you know, what's so American about the Constitution? And one of the things I had a kid say that I thought was really insightful was, she says, the most American thing about the Constitution to me is not the Constitution itself, but how it was made. A group of guys got together and had 4 months of fierce debate over differing ideas, and then they came out of it with one idea to move forward the people. And that's what America is. And I was like, dang, like, top shelf, man. Anyway, but all of that to say, it would not have happened, everybody agrees, it would not have happened without George Washington, because George Washington was the only man that everybody trusted for his character, for his having been proven. And if you study George Washington, he is an amazing pessimist and an amazing optimist at just the right time. Like the Battle of Second Battle of Trenton, like, he's got a plan. And about halfway through, that plan falls apart, and he pivots on a dime, and he wins the thing. And it's amazing. He was, anyway, so I better stop there. Moral of the story, study George Washington. You'll be a better human being. He really is. I mean, I say this hesitantly, but outside of the Bible, he may be the single greatest, most virtuous figure in all of history. Don't quote me on that, but he is in the running. In my not so humble opinion. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Fanboy over George Washington later. I love George Washington. But all that to say, like, that's, there is a place for both of these. We are to have strategy and encouragement. We are to think things through carefully, and we are to wave the flag and charge up the hill. Both of those are part of what we do as Christians when we walk by faith, leading people into God's promises, if you will. All right, so let's get to the third point, and I got 5 minutes to get to my grand denouement, which I'm not sure is all that great, but this is the part that I found most exciting. How do we do all this? How does all this happen? How do you stay ready? How do you know when to recon and when to rally? And my answer is, what are you looking at? What's your focus? And let's see what these guys have to say when they get back. And we'll see what their focus was versus what it should have been, with the exception of Caleb and Joshua, who focus on what they should say. So anybody gracious enough to finish the text 25 through 33? Thank you, Bailey.
After exploring the land before we return to Moses. Word to the whole community. Was there a report to Moses? Get into the land you sent us to explore. Here's the kind of fruit. People living there are powerful on the count of the Lord. It's all giants there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and the Canaanites live along the coast. Caleb tried to quiet the people. Go at once to take the land, certainly conquer it. Other men who have explored the land with this can't go up against them. They're stronger than we are. And that report about the land traveled through. All the people we saw were.
Nicely said, nicely read. So what, sorry, I'm just trying to think where to go with this. Anybody got a slightly different wording for the very end of verse 33 in your translation? Tara, let me just, sorry, that was an unfair question. Let me just read what the, what's this, the NASB? Yeah, the NASB has to say. Second half of the verse. We were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. So what's, I guess if you will, what makes the difference between Caleb and Joshua, because we later find out Joshua also said, let's go in, and the other 10? Like, what was the difference of focus between the two? Here, here. And so the question is, what do you focus on? I almost didn't, this is kind of crass, but I almost entitled this last section, My Eyes Are Up Here and Over Here. But like, the question is, what are you focusing on? If you're totally lost by the reference, we'll explain another time. But anyway, like, what are you focusing on? If you're into whatever alliteration the way I am, I thought of, are you looking at, now I totally lost it. Are you looking at the problem? Or do you focus on the promise? Because, yeah, there's problems here that we need to overcome. But there's a promise of God that this is our land. And by his grace, we will take it. Mm-hmm. Yep. And think back, by the way, to the last lesson I taught where I said the problem, J.B. Phillips said, the problem with every Christian's problem is his God is too small. Once again, we have, your God is too small. You don't believe your God's big enough to overcome these problems. There it is. Are you focused on the problems of the moment, or are you focused on the promises of the master? You know, you got to work. If I had a thing in the Burnt Hickory app, that's what I'd have you fill in the blank, right? Are you focused on the problems of the moment or the promises of the master? Here's another one. What's your eye on? Is your eye on the weeny little grasshopper or the wondrous loving God? Like really, that's their thing. To me, this is the most telling moment when they say, we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. Yeah, and guess what? You're looking at the right place. You are a grasshopper, you're saying the right thing, but you're not looking at the right place. Yeah, you're a grasshopper, but your God is a big God. And who cares that it's the Nephilim and the Anak and all these problems? You know, there's a million reasons why you can't. But you got to focus on what you can. And to me, the thing that's in the middle, like, I don't know, you know, I don't see this literally or whatever, but like, the thing that's sad about the whole thing is, I'm calling it the cluster of Eshkol, the grapes. Did you notice, by the way, it says, go back to, it's a single cluster of grapes. That's what I'm trying to get at. Verse 23, they came to the valley of Eshkol. From there, they cut off a branch with a single cluster of grapes. And it's on a pole held by two guys. That is a big cluster of grapes. It is. And I think Ryan's right. And this is why Moses told him to bring it back. Like,
for a lot of wasted energy.
Touche, touche. They need to watch those videos and come up with a better way to carry the stuff. So how do you get to that point? How do you get to the point where you can say, all right, let's get over these problems? I think my answer is, are you looking at, are you savoring the Eshkol cluster? Are you eating Christ, our Eshkol cluster? Are you looking at that? Are you seeing the first fruits and enjoying what will be ours in him? And I think it's all about focus, right? What are you looking at? What's the right thing? And I literally had 7 points of application that I don't have time to go through. So let me see if there's any of them that are totally worth it. What's your focus? Like, here, I'll give you an example. So a couple of nights ago, And if you don't know, like, I peak when I first wake up, and it just gets worse as the day goes on. Like, 9 o'clock is about my high point. Like, seriously, like, after that, it just goes downhill from there. So it was like, whatever, 8 at night, and Brent is loving pretending to be Kylo Ren and Captain Phasma. And, like, he's trying to force pull me over and stuff like that, and I'm just shot. And I'm like, oh, sorry, buddy, I can't do this. And then I prepared this lesson and felt wonderful, right? What's my focus? Is my focus on how tired I am? Or is my focus on the man that he can become? And so for what it's worth, the Lord was kind. I got another chance. And so what was it, last night or 2 nights ago, he's force pulling me and I'm like flying into him even though I'm utterly exhausted and all kinds of stuff. Like, I thought of Bandit from Bluey, you know, focus on Bandit. But again, where's my focus? Is my focus on how tired I am? Because I was tired. Or is my focus on this kid and the great person that by God's grace he can become? Like, we have to do small groups at North Cobb Christian. I do not enjoy them. Sorry, I don't mind. Anyway, it's just not my thing. Teach a class, do it all day. Get 7 or 8 guys together and talk about feelings, not my cup of tea. Am I focusing on how difficult this is? Or I had this moment preparing this lesson because I'm teaching or I'm advising or whatever they call it, freshmen now. Is my focus on what kind of seniors could these guys be? What kind of leaders in the school do I have the chance to build up here? And I know that sounds so corny and John Maxwell-ish and all this good stuff, but like really, what's my focus is what I'm trying to get at. Am I eating the Eshcol cluster or am I focusing on the gigantic giants? There's 100 other things to do there. Or 100 other things I could give you for examples. I thought of Frodo and Sam. You remember when Frodo says he can't remember the sound of water, the taste of strawberries? And Sam says, well, I can remember it for you, and carries him. There will be times when people will not be able to focus on Jesus. And one of the things we can do is to focus on Jesus for them with our prayers and that kind of thing. Anyway, so yeah, 100 other things if you really care, ask me and I'll like email him or whatever. But the big idea is, George Mueller. All right, so here, closing story, and if you got to go ahead and go. George Mueller was stuck in a fog, like he was trying to travel, and he's stuck on he's trying to travel in America, big fog, ship can't go anywhere, and so he prays with the captain for the fog to be lifted, and the captain's like, this is never going to work, that kind of thing, and George Mueller says, Captain says, I've never seen fog this dense. Do you know how dense this fog is? No, George Mueller replied. My eye is not on the density of the fog, but on the living God who controls every circumstance of life. And he prayed, and according to the story, which was actually told by the captain, not George Mueller, 10 minutes later, the fog was gone. I'm not saying that that's going to happen every time, but I do say the George Mueller quote, my eye is not on the density of the fog, but on the living God who controls every circumstance of life. So what's the focus of our fixation? So that was a lot, but my hope is all of it was, or some of it at least, was helpful so that we can walk by faith into God's promises. We can lead our families. We can love people well. We can take the courage to speak to strangers with shrewd strategy and neighbor-inspiring love because of our fond fixation on Jesus, our Eshcol cluster of the great things to come. Pardon comments or thoughts?
Well done. Thank you.
Glad if it was helpful, Ming. Yes. Jesus be honored and the church be built. Andrew, would you pray us out, please, sir?
Absolutely. Sure, thank you for today and thank you for this opportunity to gather together in this place. Thank you for feedback. Be with us focus on your promises.
Amen.